You're listening to The Pulse. I'm Maiken Scott. Facts can be presented in different ways to tell different stories. If you've served on a jury, you know that. Take, for example, a tale involving a chainsaw, a tricky safety switch, and a subsequent injury. It could be spun into a story of corporate greed, where the bottom line ruled, corners were cut, and consumers were put at risk. Or one could emphasize personal responsibility and foolish, irresponsible use of a chainsaw. Presenting a case to a jury in a convincing fashion is obviously a big part of a lawyer's job, and some are enlisting the help of neuroscience to do their work better. Joining us now are Kelly Yankee and Mark Calzaretta of Magna Legal Services. Both use their backgrounds in neuroscience and psychology to help their clients target specific areas of jurors' brains. Mark and Kelly, thank you so much for being on The Pulse.
Thank you for having us.
Mark, if I'm an attorney in a courtroom, I perhaps am presenting facts, right? Things that I've collected, evidence to a group of people. But you think of it more as a story that's being presented.
I always think of it as a story, and it should be thought of as a story because that's how we communicate every single day with each other. We certainly don't walk up to someone that you're friendly with and start listing out a series of facts. You kind of have a conversation, a comfortable social conversation, and usually it wraps itself around, you know, a story. We react to stories, and they keep our attention. In a courtroom, the most important thing is attention, attention and retention.
And Kelly, how does neuroscience fit into the courtroom and into convincing juries?
Neuroscience from fMRI studies and from a variety of other studies have told us that the brain actually prefers stories. It's more active when we're listening to stories versus listening to just a series of chronological events. One key component here is that when we hear stories about someone else, or, you know, about something compelling, this phenomenon called theory of mind takes place, where these older brain structures like the limbic system are actually activated as we're listening to a story that allow us to mentalize or essentially infer the motivations, beliefs, states of others and how that might predict behavior. And we know that this theory of mind exists when we look at fMRI or imaging studies of the brain compared to when they don't hear information in story format. So we know that it actually has a real impact on the brain and the way that we receive the information.
But how do we know which story might appeal to which person? So I'm a mom. If I hear a story about a child or about another mom, I'll relate on that level. If somebody else hears that story, they might relate to another character in that story or to another part.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that as an attorney, when you're going into a venue, you've got 8 or 10, 12 people sitting in front of you. You need to know who those people are, what kinds of themes are really going to resonate with those people based on the experiences they've had in life. You know, and more importantly, from a neuroscience perspective, if you can tie that story or wrap that story around the experiences that they had, they already have a neural network or a neural pathway associated with those experiences that they can tap into. They can actually get into the shoes of the characters and know what that experience is like.
That's when we conduct jury research in any given case, that's what our research, the goals, one of the main goals of the research is to figure out what those predispositions, what those biases are. So what does the mother, in a case that involves a child, bring to the table that another woman of the same age with the same socioeconomic background, the same sort of makeup, but the major difference is she doesn't have any children. How does this affect all different people? And how can we tell a story that sells to everybody, that impacts everybody, so we can give each person the piece that they need in order to have some common ground?
So how do you create that kind of story? You're presenting facts still, you're presenting evidence, but how do you craft that narrative around it that will appeal to a broad audience?
We know that there are certain triggers. We track biases. We track things that are occurring in different venues and different jury pools. So we know that certain things are going to be important. That's just the nature of what we do, just from all the research that we've done. So, for example, to use what you were talking about earlier, so you have a case that involves a child, maybe the death of a child, and you have a mother. We know that the role of the mother, the parental role, who was responsible for that child at the time when this event took place, that women who have children are going to be laser focused on that mother's conduct. So that story around her being a good mother and her role there that day, we know is going to be at the forefront of that particular story so that we can set them at ease that, okay, the mother didn't do anything wrong here. Or if you're on the other side, you're defending it, here's what the mother did that you wouldn't do, Miss Juror. You would never care for your child like that, would you?
What kind of information do you have when it comes to the jury selection process?
Well, it depends upon what you have going into, you know, the selection itself. Because with the advent of social media and all these, the internet, and there's just so much information out there and people readily put themselves out there that now you can get all of this kind of information. And we'll have teams of people back at our offices that are combing the web and social media for information on jurors.
Oh.
Even if you have a really funky alias like Kitty999 or something like that, and you have to find that person and match it up, but it's out there.
Where's justice in all of this? And do you think about that? You know, sometimes we look at our legal system and it feels like it's about who did what better in the courtroom, but it's not really about, is this fair? Was it just? So how do you grapple with that as you refine the process to persuade a jury?
It's always an issue, right? And you want to walk out with any profession, you want to walk out at the end of the day and feel good about what you did and feel that what you did was right. And that's the same with juries. And so that dovetails nicely right into jurors want to do, the people want to do the right thing overwhelmingly. So, you know, the other thing, 99.9% of every case, civil case at least, does not try. They settle. So there's a big process out there of back and forth of resolving these long before they ever hit the courtroom. And we're part of that process in that resolution process also. When you're in trial, though, it's a battle. Certainly the people with the deep pockets have the ability to work and to really figure out and craft that story. That's the tough part about it. But I feel that it balances on the margin. It balances itself out because there's plenty of those cases where they go in and they think that they're going to do well and the plaintiff really knocks their doors off. So I feel that the jurors on balance, they get it right. I do.
Well, Kelly and Mark, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Kelly Yankee and Mark Calzaretta are jury consultants at Magna Legal Services.